Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. Back together in our Cleveland studios with a beer to review from our friend Dave from Philly and a whiskey to review from Steve. First of all, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing, Mr. Jet Setter?
Yeah, it's been, you know what? I'm doing great, actually. I had a good week.
You're going to catch me on air while I'm airline
miles. I'm chasing you. Might even get you on Marriott points soon.
You'll definitely outpace me. I mean, you're literally living in a hotel.
Yes, so. Pretty much. So let's start with the beer real quick. It's the Up and Out Hazy IPA from 2SP Brewing from our buddy Dave in Philly. So thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. I don't really want to do a, like, you know, 0 to 100 scale on beers just because there's too much personal and, well, I guess there always is. But I just assume thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm giving it a thumbs up. It's nice. It's light, good flavor.
Yeah. So I'm not beer guy. I think I've explained this on the show before.
Yep.
When it comes to whiskey and beer, I'll always go for the lighter beer and the heavier whiskey, so to speak. I enjoy whiskey more than I do beer. But this is really good. You know, in terms of craft beers, they can turn me off pretty quickly because one, they're either too heavy or in terms, like, they just feel like they sit in your stomach like a loaf of bread, or they just don't taste good.
Right, I think you get turned off when they want to blast you with hops, and you're like, yeah, great. You put 25 different hops in there. That's fantastic, but it tastes like shit.
Exactly.
I think homebrewers do that a lot.
They do. Homebrewers, and even some of these smaller craft brewers.
Definitely.
You know, Super Devil IPA 5000 or what, you know, whatever.
Right.
But this is actually good. You know, tasting notes, and pardon me, I'm going to take a sip.
No pardoning necessary.
It's more for the...
I know.
So there's a slight edge to it in terms of hoppiness. Just a hair of maybe citrus in there. It kind of reminds me of like a citradelic.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit lighter, I would say.
Right, like a little bit lighter, but I could definitely drink it. You know, I could definitely drink more than one. And which there's a lot of craft beers where I can't say that. Not necessarily because they taste bad, but just because...
You feel like you're eating a loaf of bread.
Right. I mean, they're dense. But this is something that's light. I could definitely drink more than one, especially on a warm day.
This is definitely a hot weather beer.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
And I like it. So, Dave, good call. And, I mean, he sent so many that, I mean,
more to come. If other people want to send us beverages to try, thank you very much. We'll make a way for that to happen.
Right, just reach out to us either on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email, you know, Steve or Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com. And if you want to send us something because you think our taste or our palates are not sophisticated enough and we need to be exposed to something else, then we are more than willing to take whatever you send us. Or if you have a suggestion on something that we should try and rate, then send it to us, and if we can get our hands on it, then we absolutely will. We don't hesitate to purchase beer or whiskey, and sometimes we go to the extreme. Extreme. Yeah. So this is random. We didn't talk about this before, but I was very busy at work today.
All right.
But I took a little break, and I needed to separate myself completely from work. So I took some time, and I got on one of my favorite sites, Masters of Malt. Masters of Malt is where I find some of these rare whiskeys. It's a company that hails out of the UK. And, you know, you pay a little bit more because you have to pay a shipping cost. But you can find some of the whiskeys that you just can't get here in the States or I can't get in Ohio, right? And instead of having, you know, instead of trying to look and have some guy in California buy it and then, you know, deal with all that stuff, you can go to Masters of Malt. Typically, they had it.
All right.
And so I go there today, and I found, like, three whiskeys. And I put them in my cart, was all ready to go. My profile's all set up. I didn't need to put payment information in. I was ready to rock. And it goes to your zip code and it says, oh, we're sorry. We no longer ship to the U.S.
I saw you put that on Facebook.
And I completely...
And it was clear that you were not happy with your... When
right. I mean, it just... So I started to dig into it. Like, what the fuck just happened? What happened was the company that owns Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, InBev, bought Masters of Malt because it's a small distillery, and then they also have their website and everything else in their distribution thing. But InBev bought them back on April 18th of this year, 2018. And so InBev has kind of halted shipping to the United States because they're basically trying to line up the supply chain and all that stuff. And then obviously I'm sure there's going to be some price adjustments. So I'm sure prices will go up for the different things you can buy at Masters of Malt. But so right now we're cut off.
Your secret source of, not secret, but your
source. Well, right. I mean, it's my source. I mean, there's a lot of people who are just like, you know, I mean,
so a lot of people listening to this are hearing, here's what you could have been doing for years, but can't now.
Right. But you can't now. Ha ha. you know, I mean, and the reason why people would be turned off by it is because you go there and you look and the prices are better for the whiskey. You're like, oh, it's cheaper, right?
And then you
pay for shipping. But I was doing the math today and I said, well, because I found another site here stateside, didn't have the diversity, didn't have quite the selection that I was quite used to with Masters of Malt, but they did have some things that I can't get in the stores here. And I was looking at it, and there is a 15 to 20% difference in price on the whiskey. And you're still paying a shipping cost. It's not nearly as high because, I was paying...
Crossing the ocean, right?
You know, like, I would buy three bottles, and the shipping cost for that would be anywhere from $50 to $70. So, you know, you're paying a $15 shipping fee to get it here locally, but then if you're paying an additional, you know, anywhere from 5 to 20%, depending on what you're looking at, I don't know. I don't know what the trade-off is there. But anyway, that's something that caused me great trepidation today. Actually derailed my day at work a little bit because when that thing popped up and said we no longer ship to the U.S., I literally lost it where someone came in my office and said, oh, my God, we're closing a deal, which is a big thing. And you're like, oh, my God, what went wrong?
What the fuck?
Right. You know, like,
did this deal, people be out on the streets? No, my whiskey's not going to
get. Right, because I'm reviewing the survey, I'm reviewing documents, and they're like, oh, my God, something's wrong with the survey or something's wrong with the partnership agreement. I'm like, no, all that shit's fine. Nah, I can't get fucking whiskey. No,
but something important really happened.
Right, like,
here.
Something really important. Like, I can't get access to my fucking booze. So, anyway, but right.
Staying with whiskey, though, so we have Redbreast. What? Go ahead.
All right, so this is Redbreast Lestau, the Lestau edition. And Redbreast comes from the Jameson distillery. It's basically a more refined Jameson or a more refined Irish whiskey.
Right.
And it out of the gate, it's got a different taste.
Yes, it does.
It's definitely more of a Scotch-style Irish whiskey, if that makes sense. And because you've tasted it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just got that lasting flavor on the back end, on the tongue. And it's just different. It's different than any Jameson or even Redbreast that they've produced before. And even the flavor profile there's some spice to it. There's
a lot of citrus.
Yeah, there's definitely some citrus. And then there's some other stuff in there that I'm not sure. Like, I almost want to say, like, this is going to sound ridiculous, but like marmalade or something. I don't know. Like,
okay.
But it's kind of a bizarre taste. And the one thing I'm not
sure. What's
the
ABV on it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking at. So it's a 46%.
Wow.
Coming in, so that's a 92 proof, and I like it. It initially, you're just like, because if you've had Jameson or Redbreast before, you're expecting one thing, and this is totally
very
not
different,
that.
Yes.
You have to come in with a clean palate, so it is different, but I like it. I'm scoring it at a 93.
I only gave it a 91, but I was thinking the whole time 92, 90, because honestly, had I known the alcohol content was that high, I probably would have kicked it up at least a point or two, because it is smooth as silk.
It is.
And it is, honestly, it reminds me of Glenmorangie.
Yes.
I mean,
it does. And that's why, I mean, they definitely were going for a Scotch style whiskey, which a lot of people say, well, the only difference between Irish whiskey and Scotch is where it's made. And that's not even remotely close to true. When you look at, you know, what they use to make it and, you know, how much, you know, barley to corn and,
right.
you know, I mean, there's a huge, or barley to corn, I'm sorry. Yeah. Corn is bourbon, folks.
Right.
You know what we should do? One of these days after the whiskey review, I think on the next show, we're going to explain the different types of whiskeys.
Okay. There are people like Whiskey Muse who we interviewed or talked to and kind of got blown off by.
You talked to her.
I talked to her. Actually, no, I never talked to her. She does that. But yeah, we can definitely do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should go through.
Or even as a separate thing, just like.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go through and then we'll definitely put something on our. I think we should put something in the website that explains the difference between American whiskey and bourbon. And Canadian whiskey and Scotch and Irish whiskey.
Absolutely.
And rye.
And then even go into the fact that there's a bunch of like other, non-Kentucky bourbons and non-Scottish Scotches.
Well, I mean, explain what it means to be a bourbon. You don't necessarily have to be made in Bourbon County or in Kentucky to actually be considered a bourbon. There's actually
Cleveland whiskey is a perfect example of that.
Right. There's definitions. There's actual like legal, definitions of what bourbon is and what some of these whiskeys are. So, note to self, I'll put that together, put it on the website, and then we'll either put it on a show or we'll make it its own little separate after show or side show.
Sounds good.
That's what we do here. We learn them up.
We got to get into the news stuff now. So today there was another school shooting, this time in El Paso, Texas. I believe 10 dead. I hate to go down.
El Paso or Santa Fe?
Santa Fe, I'm sorry. You're right, it was Santa Fe. El Paso, fuck, sorry. So all the people who've heard me say, here's the things that they should do to make AR-15s less available, this incident flies in the face of that because this kid used a shotgun and a revolver. So we're talking 1920s technology or pre-1920s technology here.
And he took out double-digit people.
I mean, yeah, 10 people.
He killed 10 people. This one, they're all terrible. They're all terrible. Now, this happened today, and as messed up as this sounds, what I'm about to say is when I was driving home from work today, I took some solace in my reaction to it today. I got the news came across my phone.
All right.
We were in a meeting. And, well, not only my reaction, but the group of people I was with, everyone's reaction, because it came across my phone and everyone's phone kind of buzzed at the same time.
Right.
And everyone initially made a face but didn't say anything. And then more information came through. There was a school shooting and people were injured, at least 8 injured. And then the number of people dead, 8 to 10 dead. And as it came out and, you know, as our meeting is going and we're doing, you know, something that's really important for our agency, one of the people said, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened again. And she had to be excused. You know, because she was that upset about it. And, you know, multiple people pushed away from the table, and not because our meeting was disrupted, because they were just upset because they can connect, because they have kids, or they have empathy, whatever it might be. But people were moved. And so I took some solace in that as much as people, there is the idea that we're desensitized to it because it happens so often, there was still a reaction, an empathetic emotional reaction to this happening that for some reason gave me hope. And maybe it's because of discussions that we've had where we said,
I've talked about how numb I've gotten because I'm still numb.
And it's it, There is a certain level. That's
a disgusting thing to say. I own that what I'm saying is horrible, but yet.
But it's real. It's reality. It's. I mean, because it's happened so many times.
I'm no longer shocked.
Third school shooting in 8 days.
Okay. I didn't know that.
There was one in Illinois where the resource officer stopped it, and the resource officer ended up shooting the potential gunman. And then there was another one. I don't remember the specifics of it, but no one was killed. I think there was one or two people injured. But needless to say, multiple people. And then there was the guy who walked into Trump's hotel or Trump's property or whatever with a gun and screaming about Trump's control that, you know, they had to take down, but they didn't kill him.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah, that happened today, but it was happening simultaneously with what was going on in Santa Fe. So it definitely fell to the wayside. But that was something random and bizarre as well.
You know, I come off on the show as being Mr. Gun Control, and I am a gun owner and a former NRA member, as I said 150 times.
There's a gun on the wall.
There's a gun on the wall.
If you watch our show on YouTube, you can openly see it.
Yeah.
And if you go to our Instagram account, it's in every picture of the booze that we take.
Right. So, well, and I mean, that was an assault rifle in 1912 when it was roughly made. But.
And you can make an argument that if you or someone trained with that for an extended period of time, that they could...
Well, that's clunky, dude. That's not a bolt-action rifle.
Yeah, but still, I mean, listen.
That shoots a much more powerful projectile than all the gun, than an AR or any handgun. It's just, it's a slow, clunky chunk of metal. But in any event, I mean, it could definitely kill multiple people in a short period of time. I'm really at a loss right now. There are things I would like to see done that I think would make the world or the country safer. To say they would make them safe would be way pie in the sky.
We've talked about those things many times. And I usually... You usually
disagree with me, and so do many other people, and I'll accept that we're not on the same page.
But if you think about today...
Nothing that I've ever said would have impacted today's events. Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. And so... But some of the things that have been discussed in terms of there were now this is a bizarre case because this kid, not bizarre, but there's layers to this. The kid was on the football team and was, you know, if I don't know if it's still there, but the school, at least the athletic department and the football team, said he was an integral part of the team. He was a sophomore, I believe, and he had an impact, and it was acknowledged. But at the same time, he was bullied by a student and possibly a teacher.
Well, and he said that they said that he targeted specific people and left specific people unharmed, and that he wanted his story to come out. And you hear all this, you hear a lot of times and media reports that, you know, people are doing when they commit these crimes, they're looking for the sensationalism. And I always think, well, most of them end up dead, so maybe they're looking for a story, but they're not hearing it. This kid was taken alive. He's being charged with capital crimes in a state that is not shy about using capital punishment.
And they're not shy about using it on kids or mentally inept people.
Right. He asked for a public defender, so that tells me this kid probably doesn't come from money.
No.
That just hit you in the gut, didn't it? Did you know that or no?
I didn't know that.
I saw that. I read that
Which,
today.
Here's the thing. Public defender doesn't necessarily mean bad, especially in a case like this.
Right.
Because a public defender's office is going to look at this and say they're going to find their most experienced or their best capital crime defender, put it on their docket, and they will move things around so that this can be handled the right way. There's a lot to think about.
We don't know if he's even going to plead guilty or not.
Right. I mean, he could theoretically...
He did not enter a plea today. Whenever
his arraignment is, he may come out and plead guilty. And so there will be no trial, media, all that. It'll just be a sentencing. On the other hand, if there is... The public defender's office is going to handle this, they're gonna look at all the different angles, not just the we are gonna provide him the best defense that we can, but they're gonna be sensitive to the fact there are 10 families of victims. There is the political atmosphere that we're currently living in, and that will, at least if they're a savvy public defender's office, and all that will be taken into consideration. So that it's not the end of the world.
I'm not. It's not like I'm rooting for this kid. I mean, if he shot 10 people in cold blood because of a high school feud, I'm not hoping that Alan Dershowitz jumps in and does a Richard Gere in Primal Fear type thing. Weird movie reference, but actually really good movie.
Really good movie.
Yeah. I hate to say how numb I've become. It's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't, think about the families, but I shouldn't say I'm numb so much as I'm not shocked. Like, I hear this news, it's no longer, I can't believe it. It's now like, fuck, again?
Yeah. And that's a real reaction. And even Donald Trump today acknowledged this is happening too often. We've had it.
Yeah.
It's happened too consistently for too long a period of time. And we have to get to the bottom of it. It's not a simple answer. It's not just guns. Right? I mean, some people will argue just get rid of the guns, but
you can't practically do.
But even if you could, though,
right?
I mean, we're seeing things happen happen in the UK, happen in Australia. Maybe it's gun violence. Yeah. Maybe it's a knife. Maybe it's a truck. Maybe it's a bomb. But we really have to start to think about really what are we doing to help people who are having problems. Mike Wood would say people with mental health problems are more likely to be abused than to cause harm, or they're more likely to be victims than to be the aggressor. Understood. But we're seeing a lot of these cases where these kids have been heavily medicated, or they've been medicated to some way, shape, or form. And if you don't want to classify them as having a mental defect or whatever. Listen, anytime you have a person that snaps, which his retort could be anybody could snap at any given time. Okay.
I hate when you debate Mike Wood when Mike Wood.
I know, but I'm sorry. But I am at least saying what he would say. I'm not attacking what.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
I'm not attacking him. I'm just saying, knowing that if he's listening or whatever, like
sure.
his thought process, having read his
talk
book
to us, sure,
and yep. having talked to him multiple times. All that being said, there's got to be a classification for when a person makes that decision to kill and they're not in fight or flight mode, right? Like they're not face to face with a tiger. They're not face to face with a gang of roving madmen. They have sat at home, decided that.
This was calculated, right? This right, because really
he had
calculated
Molotov cocktails and he had some other explosive devices. So he sat there. At least he spent some period of time planning this out before he did it. So that, at some point in time, he had to have snapped, but to be able to think through this, put it together, plan it, and execute it, that is a person who has detached themselves from society for an extended period of time, well beyond 24 hours, it seems like even beyond 72 hours or a week or 2 weeks. And so there's got to be some sort of mental issue going on there. And how do we address this? Is that something that we should be looking at more heavily than the gun? Because guns have been around a long time.
Yep. And school shootings haven't, right? I mean, Columbine was the first one I know of. Maybe they were around before that.
No,
I don't know.
Others have happened. There were others,
but that was the first one that I know of that really. That's the first one that I know of. Period. I mean, and that could be due to my age.
It's one of the first ones at a white suburban school that drew national media attention.
Okay.
Because
all right. Well, that
I mean, there's right. plenty of there have been
schools that have been hit with drive-bys and
all that sort of stuff and drugs. I mean, that's why the penalties are so. It's one of the reasons why penalties are so harsh
in school
for
zones,
drugs,
right?
In school zones, and especially, you know, in the inner city. But it's, you have to look at the inner city much differently than you look at these suburban white schools where this sort of thing happens. And then you really have to ask the question, how come this never happens in these inner city schools? You know, is it because of the metal detectors? Is it because of the different mentality of the students? I mean, are you medicating the students in the inner cities the way that you're medicating the students in the suburbs? And maybe it's just because, maybe the reason why you're not is because the parents in the inner cities don't have necessarily have the resources to get their kid to a psychologist or someone who would say he needs Ritalin, Adderall, Xanax,
right,
whatever. I don't know.
Let me ask you a question, though. In the past, we've talked, and I don't want to, you know, put words in your mouth, but metal detectors in inner city schools, I think, is the fact that they were in inner city schools and not in suburban schools, I think you found very offensive because you're basically treating these kids differently than other kids. Do you think...
Who found it offensive?
Huh?
Who found it offensive?
I thought...
When?
If I'm misinterpreting something you've said in the past or not remembering correctly, then I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, where I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio...
Did you go through a metal detector in school?
No.
You went to a private school?
I went to a private school, but oddly enough, I went to a private school that was right in the middle. I mean, we had a family planning, I'm putting up air quotes,
yep,
a family planning center literally right next to us. I mean, there was...
Well, you're in Youngstown. There's no,
right, I mean,
there's no posh...
Right,
I
mean,
say that. That's dickish.
It's a family planning center, but it wasn't Planned Parenthood per se, but... That's where, if you were a young high school girl and you had a baby and you didn't want to keep it, that's where you went. Across the street was a funeral home. You know, behind us were some dilapidated houses. There was a freeway off to the right, and then there was all sorts of sketchy shit to the left because, you know, WIC turned into Elm Street, and Elm Street was where bad shit happened, and it wasn't Freddy Krueger.
Okay, well done.
Actually, I found a 38 special on Elm Street. Taped handle.
Oh, nice.
The whole nine yards. We were walking.
Serial number scraped off or no?
It actually was.
Was it really?
Okay. Yeah, because I picked it up and
Wild taped the handle.
I picked it up and I took it home. And my dad got pissed at me because I picked up a gun off the street.
Right.
He gives me the whole lecture on why that was dumb. And the reason why we found it, because this is what you do when you grow up in the hood, but... We had this game that we played where we would pick up beer bottle caps, and whoever collected the most of the same, whether it was Miller High Life or Michelob or Colt 45 or whatever it was, whoever had the most on the walk of the same most consistent ones, they won. And the losers had to buy them pizza. Right. So,
right.
But anyway, that's where I grew up.
Right.
And the high school that I went to, Catholic school, private school, very proud, very good school, but it was still not that far from the hood. It was in the hood. And, you know, we dealt with the metal detectors when they first came in. My school didn't have them, but the public school, the Rand school, which was right across the street from where I lived, which was the public high school. They had metal detectors. That school had 8 entrances, and they had metal detectors at every entrance, or I think they had metal detectors at 2 entrances, and the rest of the entrances literally were chained and locked, right? Which I'm just like, I'm pretty sure that's a fire hazard, but I mean,
again, I saw lean on me. Yeah.
but, you know, fire hazard, Youngstown rules, stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we dealt with that. I mean, that was a reality in my time. I mean, I knew people who went to Rand.
This is where age difference comes into play, because when I was in high school, that was not even a thought.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason why it happened was because there were shootouts in the hallways in the schools. There were drug deals, and the drug deals didn't stop because of the metal detectors, but at least they were able to keep the guns out. And you didn't have people brandishing guns in classrooms and in hallways or in gym class. You didn't have the shootouts at the basketball court.
Now that I think about it, there were a bunch of kids that walked around my high school with pocket knives. I mean, I think I brought a pocket knife to school multiple times. There weren't stabbings, But there were people carrying around, you know, walking through the hall with a knife in their pocket, and sometimes you could see it, sometimes you couldn't. Fuck. Just crossed my mind. That wouldn't have happened if there was a metal detector. Now, granted, there was never an incident that really mattered. I don't want to derail the conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, where I'm from, that became the norm, because Youngstown was one of those places that was hit very hard by the loss of manufacturing jobs and the downturn of the auto industry and everything else. So crime rose and drugs infiltrated and crime infiltrated and gang life, and it was all right there. And Bill Clinton and the, you know, war on drugs and the fight against crime, it all happened right in front of me. I was right in the middle of it, right where I lived. I saw it, I lived it. And all those things, all the things that we're talking about now, that we're saying, you know, metal detectors in schools are good. Look at the inner city schools. So we should do that in the public schools. But the war on drugs is bad, and this is why. All that stuff, I was a part of all of it. I saw it, I lived it, I experienced it. I had friends and family members that were lost. You know, I've, you know, a close friend that I played football with in seventh and eighth grade who is doing a lifetime bid in prison because he killed someone. You know, I mean, it was all over the place. So back to putting these metal detectors in public or in these suburban schools. Yeah, do it. And put a couple armed resource officers at the school. You know, I mean, forever, you know, figure out whatever the number ratio is, you know, and figure out a way to do it. Why not?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect point, is why not? It's a quick fix. The potential harm is, I mean, in my opinion, zero. I mean, I walk through a metal detector every time I go to the airport. Now, granted, I know I'm going through an airport. I know it's going to happen. If I had to do it every day in high school, I might change the way I think about things. It might make me feel better. Like, hey, at least I know that they're doing this. And it won't be 100%.
And at some point in time, you get used to it. Now, I don't know. And because I'm this is sad what I'm about to say, but I'm actually mixing up my school shooting stories, because I don't know if it was the school in Illinois or the school in Santa Fe, but I think one of them did have metal detectors and multiple resource officers, but I'm not sure if it was Santa Fe or if it was the school in Illinois. I do know that the school in Illinois had a resource officer, because the resource officer stopped it, but someone saying that, I believe that Santa Fe had them as well, but because of the size of the school, there were only two of them, and they just couldn't get there in time. Like, the resource officers are the ones who stopped what happened in Santa Fe.
Okay.
But he still was able to take out 10 people before they got there. And that kind of goes back to the...
And expecting much more than that. I mean, it doesn't take long. Even with a pump shotgun and a revolver, you can pull a revolver trigger real fucking fast.
Revolver, Glock, whatever it is. I mean, a pistol and a shotgun, you can do a lot of damage when you have that many targets.
Yep. All right. I mean, we can... I don't know what more to say about this.
We got to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I
think the short-term answer is get a metal detector in front of... I mean, fuck, can we really make elementary kids go through metal detectors? Are we going to have to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Fuck.
Yeah.
Sorry, that wheeze didn't sound good.
You're right, asthma boy.
Yeah, that sounded horrible.
What I'll say is metal detectors will help. And listen, the kids in Israel go... I mean...
They have missile drills.
They have metal detectors. They have fencing, barbed wire, armed guard stationed at the, you know, at a booth. I mean, I believe it's only one or two, but I mean, they have an armed guard who's armed with, you know, an assault rifle and, you know, a handgun or two, you know, when they go into school every day. And you know what? They don't have any problems.
My friend worked until recently worked for an Israeli company, and went to Israel on business multiple times and like got trained on here's what you do in case of a chemical weapons attack. Here's what you do in case of a missile attack. And she said the people there were, used to it is the word I don't want to use, but they had been through the training.
It's a part of life.
Yeah.
It's a part of life.
Which is fucked up, but it's real.
Because of the region that they live in. And unfortunately, it is now a part of, if you, especially these schools that are out in the suburbs, predominantly white.
Yep.
You got, you know, there's just, you're going to have kids who fall through the cracks. Whether they're bullied or they feel isolated or they're overly medicated.
And in this case, the guns were legally purchased by the kid's dad.
Right.
And how do you stop that?
Right. I mean, dad, you gotta put your weapons you can't.
When I grew up, my dad was a responsible gun owner, but I could have gotten into, granted, I grew up in the 80s when gun lockers were an unheard
right.
of thing.
I mean now you have biometric
guns.
You know, I mean, so there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to put your gun somewhere where the kids can't get them. You know, I mean, if you're going to sit there, oh, the kid figured out the combination. Well, either you told him the combination or you made it so easy that he figured it out. I mean, if you you got a gun safe and you're able to pick the combination and you use
one, two, three, four, five.
You know, the kid's birthday or something like that, then, I mean, again, that just because you put it in the safe, you got to give it a, you know, you can't make it an easy combination that you can remember. You need to make it a hard combination that you don't know, some random numbers or whatever it might be that you have to work to remember. And then you do a good job of remembering it.
Even with that, if you trust your kid by the age of 17, my dad had showed me, here's where I keep the 357 that I want for, you know, by 17. All right.
There's so many different variables, and we don't know what the home experience is.
Right.
You would like to think that, you know, this kid who's got this jacket with, I mean, because there were other parts to this. Like he had
a trench coat.
He had Nazi war medals. And,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had a Nazi war medal. He had the Iron Cross, the black and white Iron Cross.
Okay.
There were some, he had some other things that, you know, kind of would give you an idea that something was a little bit off. And one of the big things is parents, pay attention to your kids. Be involved with them. Understand what's going on. And it's tough. And my kid's three.
Right.
So it's easy for me to say because, you know, my kid's world revolves around, you know, princesses and Disney and, you know, ponytails and cheese puffs. So it's easy for me to know everything that's going on in her life. As she gets older, that is going to get harder. You know, she slammed the door in my face three times tonight. So it's going to get harder. But as a parent, it's your job to continue to make that effort to be involved and understand so that if your kid is getting bullied, they can talk to you about it and you can give them the necessary tools to deal with that. Or you can talk to the school if they want you to, or you could do, there's certain, you have to keep working to try to prevent your kid from going to a place where they feel that their only option is to kill people.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not going to put it on the school to identify it and do and have therapists and everything else. Like would that help? Maybe. Yeah, I hope so. And other kids, stop being assholes. Stop bullying people that are different or that you don't like or that wear different clothes from you. But as a parent, it is our job perpetually, nonstop, 24/7, for as long as we are alive and our kids are alive, to protect our kids in every way, shape, or form, which means that sometimes we're going to have to protect them from themselves. And even if they go into these deep, dark places, we have to go into those deep, dark places and pull them out. And unfortunately, this kid's parents didn't do that for him. I don't know why. And I'm sure that's a guilt that they're going to have to live with for the rest of their lives. But I can't pull punches because they've experienced this tragedy. That's on them. You know.
And this kid literally could get sentenced to death in Texas. Even if he's on death row for 20 years, he could execute at age 37.
Mm-hmm.
Let me change gears. You brought up Israel before. The Israeli embassy from the U.S. was moved to Jerusalem this week, and another horrific event happened. I think 54...
60.
60, ended up 60. 60 people were killed protesting the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, mostly by Israeli military forces. And, I mean, we've talked about the Middle East many times on the show, and I've typically been a pro-Israel guy, just kind of out of conditioning, I think. And you've talked about how you know people who have lived on both sides of this fence. Mm-hmm. And other things I've watched, I watched Abby Martin on Joe Rogan's podcast say that she personally witnessed, you know, Israeli protection forces shooting civilians with no repercussions. I mean, we talk about, you know, when an American citizen is shot wrongfully by a police officer and a trial happens and that trial results in either not a conviction or a hung jury, how that's fucked up. In the case in Israel, a soldier shoots a Palestinian and
no trial. It's
okay. That's what you did today.
Does it even make the news?
No, probably not. Right. Certainly doesn't make our news. We don't. I only know about this.
I mean, does it even make the news in Israel?
I mean, in Israel, maybe, no. I mean, I'm sure
Al Jazeera or something.
But it's so. I put something on our website. I wrote an article. Did you see it? I've got really. Yeah. I got you really Shakespearean. I thought you might make fun of me. I love Shakespeare. No.
I know. I do too. I have like 5 Shakespearean plays that I would actually love to see.
But I basically said that there needs to be an olive branch reached out to both sides. But the side that needs to reach out with the olive branch first is the side with the power, and that's Israel.
That's Israel.
And period. Agreed. I mean, there's just no. I understand that if you're an Israeli citizen or an Israeli military, professional, that you have fear and hatred of people who've put on, bombs on 16-year-old girls and had them run into a mall. But then looking at it from the other perspective, if you've been able to shoot civilians with impunity for decades, it's not hard to understand why they hate you.
And that's
and one, that's not well known.
From my friends,
right?
Whether that we'll take the no names please route, but I have friends that have family in Palestine. My babysitter, the dad, my babysitter's husband, he is Palestinian, and they can not only tell me their firsthand accounts of various abuses and experiences that they faced in whether it's Gaza or in Palestine or somewhere in the region. But my babysitter's father, he's got pictures of the aftermath, and I've got no reason to believe that he's lying to me.
Right.
What impact can I possibly have? Why would he lie to me on these things, on where these pictures come from? You can see the emotion in his being, in his soul. When he's showing me pictures of family members that were beaten or even murdered. The people who did it were, Israeli soldiers or Israeli operatives of some sort.
Right.
And who were able to get away with it with impunity. And there was no...
Steve, it's,
there
probably, was no, how, nothing. It's probably how they're trained.
This is a complex situation. And what I'll say is this. I'm pro-peace.
Right.
Me too. And I don't know. I don't know what the best solution is. I don't know if... We say if I don't know if it's a two-state solution or a one-state solution where they merge together and they figure out a way to live together peacefully, happily ever after, which I don't see how you could do after the last 70 years.
You know, I'm glad you said 70 years, though, because that's one thing they said all the time. People say, they've been doing this for thousands of years. No they haven't.
No.
This is really a post-World War II situation.
Yes.
And that's, but you agree with me, I hope, that that gets said all the time. People, it's been thousands and thousands of years. Like, no, it hasn't.
No, you're taking multiple conflicts from different regions and then dumping it on the Israeli-Palestine situation, which is right. Something that dates back to post-World War II.
Right.
When, you know, the UN and the United States had the Jews and said, we have to, you know, these
people
were...
We have to give the people displaced after Nazi Germany a homeland. Right. And they said, how about here? And the Palestinians and were like, oh, we've been here right, for a while.
The Palestinians are saying, we've been here. The Israelis are saying, listen, we're not here now, but biblically we yep. were back in the day, so this is ours. US, UN said, you know what? Fine, we'll put you here. You guys will figure it out in the next decade or so. Seven of those right. later... Where we have
it's getting worse, people being murdered,
you know, people being murdered.
Yeah.
Now, what I will say,
I'm just glad you said that because I combat people on that all the time when they say it's been thousands of years. No, it hasn't. Learn your history.
Well, I know a little bit about history.
No, it was not at you. That was at the people I argue with all the time who say that, and I'm like,
I know who you're talking about.
Anyway, sorry. Good.
You all right?
I'm good.
But so I'm sorry, we got a little off track. But with you got 70 years of everything that's happened.
Yes,
and I don't want to say I understand it because I don't. I haven't lived it. Actually, I've never been there.
I have not either.
But what I can say is again, I want peace. I want my friends that are Palestinian to be able to go home and not have to worry about family members being jailed, in prison, shot, killed, murdered. I want my Jewish friends and people of Israeli descent to be able to not have to worry about what they have to worry about.
Going to the mall and having a bombing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everything else. Now, okay, so I had lost my thought, but with what happened just this past week, 60 people, I believe, I want to say 50 of those people had direct connection to Hamas or some radicalized group. That's been confirmed. That's not okay. That's not an estimate. That's not a guess. Right.
I've not seen that number.
It started off, I think the first number I saw was 34. And the last I saw it was almost 50 of the people had connections to Hamas or some radicalized group out of the Palestinian state. That doesn't necessarily give the Israelis a pass, right? Because what the people like here in the U.S., your conservative groups, your pro-Israeli groups are saying, well, they were Hamas. And they set it up so that these people being killed were basically martyrs, and that would make people sympathetic towards the Palestinian cause, and it worked. My thing is, listen, you had 50, 60 people running out of fence, and you slaughtered them. Okay, whatever their affiliation was doesn't matter. They had tennis rackets and sticks and you
kites that they were lighting on fire. Worst
case scenario, they had a Molotov cocktail and you had grenades and bombs
and snipers
and automatic rifles and you mowed them down. Well, they were told if they crossed this line, they were going to get killed. So again, you had people running out of fence and they crossed an imaginary line. So you murdered them.
I think to be real about it, you have to say what kind of conditions you have to put human beings into where they will run at a line knowing they have a reasonable chance or a high likelihood of being murdered. Yeah.
Right. And listen, again, I want peace. I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-Jew. I'm not anti-Israeli. I want those regions. I want that region to find peace. I want that region to be a place where you can go to and not have to worry about someone, a bomb going off or someone being shot or someone being jailed in front of you.
So in order for that to happen, you know, as I wrote, I think the group in power needs to make a concerted effort to bring peace, right? Unless the guys with the snipers, with the bombs, well, with the military hardware, says we want peace and we want to reach out and say, let's make this happen. And unfortunately, I think there is so much power and money in continued conflict that there is no motivation for that to happen.
So what's the difference between that there and our prison industrial complex here and the issues that we're seeing with policing here in terms of how minorities are treated, how immigrants are being treated? Like, what's the difference?
I do think it's different in the sense that there is absolute impunity in Israel, right? We talked about that. Like, you literally... No, right. The law doesn't even pretend to exist out there. Here, it pretends to exist.
Okay.
And comfort to those who are impacted by it. I won't...
There's plenty of... I mean, Walter Scott will say, okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Fuck yourself.
Fair. No, I know what you're saying. It's not...
And so my point with that is when you look at Breitbart is the shining beacon here, because Breitbart will sit there and tell you they're not racist. And they'll explain it to you by saying they're the number one supporters of Israel of any conservative news outlet. Right? Like, so like your claim to fame and not being racist is that because you really, really support Israel. Right, and I understand
when Israel
that
is killing people.
Right, I mean, and it's just, well, it's okay. Like, yes, there's anti-Semitism, and there are people that, you know, you have obviously the Palestinian people really hate Israel, and there are some people very, like, you have your white supremacy groups that hate the Jews. So, but that's what you're using to say we're not racist,
right?
Because we really support Israel, like,
who is.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not the strongest argument.
Listen,
is it?
How many Jewish people, right? And there's a number of different people who can make this claim to fame. But how many Jewish people came to the United States and changed their name from a Cohen or, you know, pick a Jewish last name to something that sounded more acceptable to the you know, Western European white ear? I mean, there's a number. I mean, there's plenty of Jews that blended that past, quote unquote. That were able to do so. So this whole idea that you're not racist because you support Israel and Jews is bullshit. I mean, like, how you say you're not racist is that you support civil rights for Black people and for Latino people and for non-white people, and you support you know, police upholding people's civil rights and not abusing them and murdering them in the streets and getting away with it. You support, you know, employers not discriminating against potential employees just because their name sounds funny or they've got braids in their hair or whatever it is. This whole idea that you're not racist because you support Israel, and that's the only thing that you need to say or have to say to prove that you're not racist is... It's absurd, right? And I'm not the person, I don't throw around, oh, that's racist or racism exists everywhere. All you have to do, I'm not that guy, right? I mean, I don't think that I'm that guy.
No, you're not. I mean, we've called a few things differently, but for the most part, I agree, you're 100% not that guy.
But for an outlet like Breitbart to hang their hat on their support of Israel as proof they're not racist, I think is ridiculous.
It is.
But they're the same people that'll turn around and say, like, they'll watch someone get murdered in the street by a police officer here in the United States and say, well, the police
had complied.
Right. Like, I mean, if that person had complied, they would still be alive, or the police had every right to do what they did, or we support the police. And they just basically blindly support the police no matter what. And there's no line. There's I have yet to hear anyone from that station condemn any action by any police officer ever. Right? I mean, it doesn't matter.
You listen to more than me. I've never
heard it. I listen to it on a pretty regular basis because sometimes I'm just amazed by how crazy they can get. And other times I'm impressed by their way to finagle ideas and thoughts and manipulate things. And then other times they actually have good points. Kind of across the board.
So we're at 55 minutes. Do we want to jump to Come At Me, Bro, and then do a second show?
Why don't we do that?
I'm excited about my Come At Me, Bro.
All right. Well,
as we're lighting it up totally, we will talk more about other stuff. We got a lot to talk about. We'll give you two shows for the price of one. Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I want you to because you've said multiple times over the course of this evening.
I'm excited about this. And it's so totally different from what we've been talking about. But totally. If you could go back in time and attend one sporting event, literally, get there a bit before, witness it, stay after, but take in one sporting event in history, what would it be and why? And I think I know what it will be. I had such a total change of gears, I know, but...
Okay. This one I actually would have liked a little bit of heads up.
I get it.
Defeats the purpose.
I wrote down what I think you're going to say.
Oh, man. That's so broad because there's so many things that I wish I could have been there to have seen. I mean, there's the historical value sort of things, and then there's just my fandom, which I think my fandom is going to win out.
That's only fair. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think my fandom had.
This is a sign of a good Come At Me, Bro question. I've got
this,
you.
This is a good one.
I'm gonna go through your thought process. I'm gonna give you two. All right.
Okay. The first one is complete fanboy, right?
Immaculate Reception.
Yeah.
All right.
When just Franco Harris, it's late. The Steelers to be, and what's crazy, that's not even a Super Bowl game.
No,
right? It's not even a Super Bowl.
It gets them to a Super Bowl.
It's an AFC championship game against the
Oakland Raiders.
Against the Raiders. And now, mind you, I wasn't born for this.
Right.
I wasn't there, but I've seen it.
Right, but that's it.
So many times. Sure. Franco Harris, one of my favorite players. I've met him in person. He's just a really nice guy. He's a Penn State guy. He's a bigger guy than you would expect.
No, I know exactly how big he is. I jabbed him in the shoulder. He was at an Ohio State game for some award. Did I tell you the story?
No.
Literally, when I was a grad school at Ohio State, he was presenting some award. He was sitting behind me. My grad school roommate was a Penn State alum and a huge Franco Harris and Steelers fan. And I'm like, Franco Harris is coming down. So I'm looking at my roommate and I jabbed him in the shoulder.
Point.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm like, holy fuck, I just poked Franco Harris in the shoulder. I'm about to die. He was a big man. This is 1995.
Right. I mean, he just like his height and his thickness, he's broad.
But that
particular moment, because for whatever reason, for the Steel, like that's such a signature moment for my favorite.
Now, can you imagine how awful that would be today? Because that play would have taken 20 minutes of super pixelated replay.
Right.
And who knows? It might have been overturned.
Right.
Might very well have been overturned.
but that's why I would have loved to be there to see it because, I mean,
fair? You fair. Know. Okay, so that's one.
So, I mean, I could know. And then the other would be, and this one's not nearly as fun, but the first time that Jackie Robinson takes the field with the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Wow. Okay. That I wrote down Ollie Frazier one. That was right. my guess, what you would say.
There were a couple boxing matches that were up there. Anytime that Mike Tyson knocked somebody out in under a minute, just to see how dead the person looked in real life. But I think, you know, to be there, I guess, and this is something that has always, always been just something that I wanted to know what that experience was for Jackie Robinson, the first time that he walks on the field, the first, you know, black player to be on, you know, a field that we weren't allowed to be on. He had the support of some of his team and Branch Rickey, and then a majority of the rest of the world didn't want him to be there. And to hear what the crowd, the boos and the name calling and everything else, and some people say, why would you want to hear that negativity? Not so much to hear the negativity, but just to see what he did, because, I mean, he persevered through it. I mean, in his first game, I believe his first game, Jackie Robinson's first game, I don't think he had a hit. I don't think he had a hit, but I think he made a couple of plays. But either way, I mean, it's baseball, so I mean, it's just like, oh my God, a baseball player didn't have a hit.
I never would have guessed that. Like I said, I thought Ollie Frazier one would have been where he would go.
Yeah, it just.
I did think about Immaculate Reception too, but here's why that's a really interesting choice: is because you've seen the Immaculate Reception, you've seen the Ollie Frazier fight,
right?
You can't have seen. I mean, I just maybe it's out there. I don't know.
There's movies, stories,
but to actually have witnessed it, yeah.
Right? Okay, just, cool. Just to actually experience, to have some way to experience it. I think that would be the thing, because everything else I've been able to see through some sort of
replay, but you're seeing the actual footage of the actual event. Okay.
I've seen it.
Cool.
Right. And I've heard about it from those people. I've heard Ali talk about it. I've heard Frazier talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I've heard Franco Harris. I've heard everybody's perspective of the Immaculate Reception from both teams, the Steelers and the Raiders.
I love the referee's perspective. Do you know that? Do you know that? The referees literally got together and they said, how many security guards do you have here? We have six. Touchdown.
That's the way it should be.
Okay. All right. That was a really interesting answer. I enjoyed that. And
it was a good question.
Oh, thank you.
That was a good question. Now I'm annoyed.
And total change of gears. Right. All right. Now what do you got? Come at me, bro. You're going to... All right. Oh, boy.
No, it just, I wish these were coordinated better.
The whole point is for it not to be planned, though. It's spontaneous. Come at me, bro. What do you got?
Okay, so my come at me, bro, for you.
Yes.
Is. You.
Yes.
Are going to a specific restaurant on a pretty consistent basis in the Raleigh airport, right? We've had this conversation a couple of times.
I mean, I've gone to the same place a few times.
Yes. The
42nd Street Oysters Bar and the wine bar.
The Whiskey River.
But that's not a proximity. All right. Sorry, go ahead. Your question.
And you use basketball and LeBron and the decision as your reason for going there. I believe that's what you said, right?
What?
You said that you watched the decision there.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I totally misrepresented that. No, I went to an Irish pub in Raleigh all the time when I lived there. I watched the decision in a bar called Tralee, an Irish pub in Raleigh. And when I landed in Raleigh for game 7 against Indiana, I went to that same bar because if I was going to witness the last game of LeBron as a Cavalier, it might as well be there. I'm sorry. That's a miscommunication.
Okay. Well, so my come at me, bro. I thought you were going to this Irish pub in the airport.
No, it's an Irish pub near. It's near the airport.
I thought the way I understood it was that it was in the airport. You were going there because you saw the decision there, and you wanted to see LeBron's game 7 there. My whole come at me, bro, was bullshit. There's a bartender there that you like.
Oh. Well, that's definitely coming at me. No.
Damn it.
No.
Well, that's a fucked up one because
you thought you had a gotcha.
I did.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm sorry.
I did.
That was a... Well, I'm not sorry. It's communication breakdown. I didn't know I had to spell that out for a later come at me, bro. Now, in your defense, back in the day, there was a super hot waitress there that I loved seeing. We're still friends on Facebook. I don't believe she listens to the show. But when I went back to that Irish pub and took a picture, I tagged her. It said, "Hey, Claire," I'll even say Claire, haven't been here in a while. So there is some validity to your charge, but your facts are not enough to convict. Hmm. All right. You want to shut this down and then move on to the section? All right.
Yes.
On that note, ruined it. I didn't ruin anything.
You did.
All right. Yeah, it's on me. All right. Thank you for listening.
You didn't tell me the story clearly.
Well,
right, you gotta
interview better. You gotta break this down. I just took away your Christmas toy. You were ready to blow me up with this. You thought I jumped through hoops to see some hottie.
Yes.
By the way, there have been like 8 years between those two events.
So
okay, that's what you're hoping for. All right, we are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. Yeah, you do. And I mean your analysis wasn't wrong. Your facts were not on. But we are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. We are Whiskey Congress on, you know, Stitcher, iTunes, whatever.
We're on this and that and whatever.
I mean, if you're listening, you know this shit. I didn't say that. Anyway, I enjoyed talking this through. We've got more stuff to talk about, but let's break it up because we're already over an hour and 5 minutes.
Sorry to bore you, people.
We didn't bore you at all. You're welcome.